Blog Talk Radio.
His name is Malik Zulu Shabazz. Malik Zulu Shabazz.
It is indeed my honor and great joy and privilege to be invited by Brother and Dr. Malik Zulu Shabazz, who is one of the greatest student leaders of all time.
I'm talking about terrorism now. We want a war on terrorism. The war on terrorism should have started 400 years ago. Bring the flag, brother. Bring the flag.
Bring the flag.
Bring. Because I'm here to tell you that false patriotism will not get you out of this.
Right.
Holding a bandana flag around your head will not get you out of this. Huh? Flag on your antenna in your car will not get you out of this. You might be saying, God bless America. But when did America ever bless God? You might be saying, God bless America. But God might be damning America at this very hour.
What's all this shit I see on here about harassment and all that bullshit, rap for power? You some bitches get a goddamn job and make a constructive citizen out of yourself and stop all this bullshit. You wouldn't have to have no fucking rally for power. You got that message, motherfucker?
Black power. Black power. Black power. I want to welcome everyone to tonight's night, which is, of course, Sisters Night. And, of course, this, again, is the year for wellness for the sisters. And not just for the sisters. It's not just subject to the sisters, but it's just kind of geared toward the sisters a little bit more so. But, of course, brothers are welcome to listen in, and they're welcome to call in because, again, we can't have a household without the brothers. And this is not a show that we bash brothers. This is a show that, a learning show that we try to learn from. And we, you know, of course, as we started in the beginning, we discussed, you know, about health, economics, and, of course, we centered around our 10-point program, which we talk about an end to police brutality, which is one of our points, and we talk about freedom because, of course, if we're doing this work and we say that we are revolutionary or we say we're pan-Africanist or we say that we're culture nationalists, and upon us doing this type of work, we have to really start digging into the discussions of wellness, because how can we exactly save our people or try to get a few or whatever we try to do if we're not healthy spiritually, economically, socially, education-wise, if we're not teaching self-help and all these different things to ourselves as well as our family, especially toward our children. We have to be able to do this upon learning. So this is not a Jerry Springer type of show. This is not nothing along those lines, because in anything else after but, you know, and we say it's bullshit. So we have to really start getting into the ideals of freedom. And when we discuss the point number one, we talk about freedom. In the first way, we have to look at it as a story. We have to look at it as a slave that first obtained his freedom. And, of course, when he obtained his freedom, the first thing, first when he buys his freedom, we go into economics. And, of course, this show is about Panther Queens and how black women, of course, in revolution work for self. And all that's really, really important, because how can we be totally free if we are no longer on the plantations? And this is not to knock the sisters or the brothers that's on the plantations currently, because yes, we have to have income, but there's a start. So this show is upon us talking to the different queens. If you are a queen or you know of a queen that, of course, has this type of extended freedom of her own self-businesses, we have to begin to discuss these types of things, because if you notice and look at the job market sucks anyway. We're not advancing. We're just growing everybody else's company. We're not growing ourselves. We're not empowering our family. And, you know, a lot of times when we have our own businesses, we're able to, you know, do for self, of course, and have our own income and flexibility as far as our children are concerned, and being able to raise our children and being able to have something to leave to our children upon our demise. And I'm not wishing that, but of course that has to be discussed. So again, I have one of my personal comrades who I know that was an expert for this. The first time that I met her, she was also, you know, she was always an entrepreneur. So this is not like she has never been an entrepreneur. I met her as an entrepreneur 5 years ago, and she is someone that I really admire because she definitely took a risk in going out there. Well, it's really, you know, it's not really a risk today because, you know, again, because of the economical system and because of this whole, you know, inflation and America so-called being in debt, you know, to all these different entities and how they borrow money and how the banks are made. You know how the study of how the bank, we need to discuss that one day, but we talk about how the banks are made and how basically paper, the money is paper and it's basically an IOU. You know what I mean? And it's a dirty, you know what I mean? It's the dirtiest paper in the world. You know, it's dirty upon the way that some of us make it. It's dirty upon the system that it was built from, and our ancestors fought and died for this, and we're still dying for this love of so-called money. So, without further ado, I would like my guest to introduce herself. So it's 502-408. You are on Black Power Radio, Queen. Black Power.
Okay, Black Power. How you doing, Sister Mira?
I'm doing wonderful. Doing wonderful, considering.
I am Sister Africa, Abriette Sonora Wusada. I guess like Amira said, we met about 5 years ago. Definitely my sister, comrade, and met her in the struggle. And as she said, I definitely was, you know, I've always been trying to figure out how I can get out from underneath the whip. Because I never liked it, you know, so I've always been a person that when I did work a job, you know, it will be okay, and I think that a lot of women can relate, especially when you are really good at what you do, you're a go-getter. What I found is that that the White Power structure tend to utilize us well because they know that we're thorough. They know that we'll do the job. They know that we'll guard the goods. And I just got kind of tired of being that person. So I was that person that when I worked at a job, I it was very easy for me to be promoted and to be put in a management position. And then what I did was I just found myself being the overseer, and I didn't like it. And then what comes along with that is that, you know, so you're in this role and you're making, you know, maybe a little bit of money, or maybe you're not making any money at all. But what happens is you're working in an environment to where, you know, you still work with people who think that it's okay to show you their true colors. So often I worked in environments where I work with white people who said inappropriate things, acted inappropriately, you know, and then what would happen is one day I just couldn't take it no more and I would leave. And pretty much every job I've ever had went that way. It got to a point where I couldn't take it anymore. And I always could try to figure out, like, people who I knew who had worked jobs for, like, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, like, how they did it. You know, and I commend those people, but I'm just not that strong. And so I got to the point where I said, like, if I can't make it, then I just ain't going to have it. I'm not going to make it. And so that pretty much started my plight to try and figure out how I can make a way for myself without having to go and do that typical 9-to-5 hard labor, overworked, underpaid situation. So.
Okay. That's a great intro, of course. But, like, I think that it's very, very important in how you basically break down what you did at first, because I think that this is like something kind of similar but different. It was on the goal too. You know what I mean?
Right.
So if you could break that down for people, because, you know, you inspire people, and we want to inspire more of our sisters and our brothers to get out there and just start taking these chances and become entrepreneurship.
Well, I tell you what, Elijah Muhammad said that, you know, you can never go wrong, you know, if you're in the business of food, clothes, and shelter, okay, first and foremost.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, you know, you still have to have a business mind and have to be able to look at the American system, the social system, whatever it is, and find whatever the need is. Like, you need to figure out what is the demand, what is it that people need, and be able to give it to them. Not only that, it has to be your passion. It has to be something that you like to do. So for me personally, I think that I enjoy business in general. So I spend a lot of time trying to figure out specifically what that is. But I enjoy the art of networking, that the concept of that fair exchange, no robbery, where I can give you something and you give me something in return, whether it's money, you know, because one of the things I think that we have to try and get back to is that system of bartering and trading, because certainly a lot of the foundation of business that I've done has not been an exchange of the paper dollar, but it has been an exchange of services. But I think the fundamental things are you have to do what you like, because anytime you're not doing what you if you're not doing what it is that you like, then it's slavery, because that's what slavery is. It's doing something you don't want to do, you know. So because when you love it and you enjoy it, it's not really work. And so when we were building our business, you know, in the beginning, I was working 15 hours. I mean, I literally was doing 60, 70 hours a week. And I know that had I been working for anybody else, I would have been mad about it, and I probably would have left, you know. But it didn't feel that way when I was doing it for me and when I was doing it for my own personal goals. So I think that, you know, you have to find what it is that you love. And anything that you love can be made into a business. But you also want to go in a direction, at least to what to things that people really do need. And so when you're in the market of things that people have to have, then you're more likely to be successful at it. And then you just have to be diligent, you know, because it's not always it's not always fruitful, you know, like, and so we certainly have slow periods. And so when, you know, when people ask me how is business, you know, I just tell them when it's good, it's great. And when it ain't, it ain't, you know. But, you know, I can't complain because I've been able to sustain all of this time. So, but yeah, so I think that the main thing is you got to find what you like. You got to find what you love, you know, something that you're willing to do, put your money and your time, your effort into, and be happy even if you don't get the return that you want right away. You're happy that you was able to put that work into something that you love. So I think that's the main thing, yeah.
Okay, sister, break down, like, how did you start? I mean, like, okay, what was you doing before you started your business? And then tell us your business, of course.
Okay. Well, I've done a little bit of everything, really. So I don't even know what I was doing before my current business, which is Press Forward Media. But before then, I was a musician. So I pretty much did graphic design, and what I learned about being an artist was that, you know, I didn't want to limit myself to just being the artist, being the singer or the poet. I got to the point where I realized that to sustain in the music business, you got to have more talent. You know, you got to have other talents, and so and because I'm not a very patient person, I kind of self-taught myself a lot of things. So what would happen is when I'm working on the album, it's time for me to get pictures taken, and I can't get this person to take pictures at the time that I need them to take it for the price that I need them to take it for, then what I would do is I would improvise. Or if I needed graphic design work and I couldn't get a person to get my design work done at the time that I needed them to get it done for the price that I needed them to get it done for, then I would improvise, and I'd figure it out on my own. So I pretty much spent you know, probably the last 7 or 8 years just really teaching myself how to do a lot of things that allow me to cut costs, you know, for things that I needed. And I don't think that I knew at the time that I was building my, you know, building my resume and building my skill set. So, you know, then it kind of just got into other things. I ended up, you know, kind of falling into doing some PR work, you know, just because I realized that when I felt passionate about another person, that I really knew how to sell them to another person. So that became another skill set. And so, and then all of these things I would do in a very freelance, odds and ends kind of way. I didn't know how much things cost, so I pretty much just, you know, when a person would say, hey, how much do you charge? You know, I say, well, how much will you pay? You know, and so from there I started learning, like, okay, so if a person will pay this amount, then, and I learn to do this really well, maybe they'll pay a little bit more. So from there I just sort of picked up all of these trading skills and learned the business, like, literally from the inside out, reading books, you know, learning from other people. And so, you know, in 2007, I had a particular set of skills and wasn't quite sure what to do with it. In the meantime, a girlfriend of mine had a magazine called Elle Styles mm-hmm. Magazine, and she asked me to, originally she asked me to do an article. I did an article, it went really well, got a lot of good feedback. And so from there, I just sort of kind of offered help. You know, I would say, well, look, let me help you with this and let me do this. And so next thing you know, it, you know, she was like, look, King, would you like to be the editor-in-chief? So I was like, okay, mm-hmm. cool. So now me and her are working on this magazine. We're doing really well. And we're going through all these different avenues of getting printing done. And so, you know, like they say, hell has no fury like a woman scorned. Well, mm-hmm. it's true, because we had ended up working, had met some guys who had a print company here in Louisville, and they mm-hmm. We partnered with them, and they were supposed to have some magazines printed for us, and we were doing some sort of barter exchange trade where we would split advertising dollars and sales, and they would print for us at a very low cost. Well, they basically stuck us bad, and they didn't do anything that we needed them to do. And we needed them. It was a derby weekend of maybe 08. It was just the worst. And so from that point on, you know, we pretty much knew that we would never again allow ourselves to be in such a vulnerable position to where someone had that much power over us. So our last meeting with these guys, I went in, I observed their setup, and I said, now watch me. Watch me work. And so what we did was I took a picture of their printer. I found out the manufacturer. I called the manufacturer. Went in just to get a good idea of what I need to do to get to, you know, to prepare mm-hmm. myself to have this. Mm-hmm. And didn't know that it was going to be as easy as it was, you know, because this piece of equipment, the first one, I mean, by itself is a house. You know, the price of a house. And so I really thought that it was going to be very difficult to get it. But like I said, it wasn't, because, you know, we sat down with them. A few days later, they called us and said, when can we deliver it? And so the goal was, the number one goal was that we would just have this piece of equipment just so that we could print our magazine. It really was never about being a print company. But then we realized, oh, we got to pay for this thing. So we just had to teach ourselves how to print, you know. Our next goal, our next motivation was we were putting these guys out of business that did us wrong, and we did. And, you know, so, and the rest is history. But, you know, it really was a matter of just, like, I think it's a black woman thing. And, I mean, it could be a woman thing in general, but really black women, we have this thing where if you – tell us, or you doubt us, or you tell us that we can't, it's like magic. It's like magical.
We do
so some
can.
Of the stuff, yeah, it's like some of the stuff, I really can't even tell you how we did it, but all I know is somebody said we couldn't, so therefore we did, you know.
Well, could you tell us the name of the print, your business, number one, and as well as the magazine again? So those, and, you know, and do give out your information, because it's not about just, you know, right. me. It's about you promoting your business as well as getting more contacts out there because of what you do, because you do the flyers, and you do all kind of different things. And that's another thing, if you could break down also what you do within your work, what you do.
Right.
You know?
Well, it's the name of our business is Press Forward Media, and that pretty much came from the publication company name that we were using for the magazine, which was Forward Press Publications. So the magazine is L Styles Magazine under the umbrella for Press Publications. And so then we made the printing company, respectively, Press Forward Media. And we pretty much do everything from business cards, banners, brochures, signs. I mean, pretty much anything that can be done print-wise, we have the capabilities of doing it. The only thing that actually we don't do is T-shirts. But we're looking into that just because we've had a lot of people ask. And then as well as graphic design. And then we do some specialty work, some consulting. So we have had people come in with the business, and they may say, okay, look, I'm starting a new business, and we pretty much start them from scratch with a logo, a marketing concept, you know, and really just help give them some sort of direction of where they want to go. So we would handle the printing need, but also a marketing need, as far as what direction to take them into. So we do some consulting work as well. And then as far as the magazine, it is a hair and fashion magazine. We do, you know, some social commentary inside of the magazine. At the moment, though, the magazine is on hold. We're working on getting it just to be an online thing, and you know, and pretty much for the reasons that you named earlier, the economy is horrible, so advertising dollars are not where they once were. So what happened was, when a lot of companies started to cut their budgets, that was one of the first things that they cut. So you know, people who were giving, you know, us money, local magazine money, like we were certainly the first to be cut out of their budgets. But the spirit of the magazine is still there. And then we also have some other magazines actually in the works that we think will go over well or better than a hair magazine. So we're working on a food and wine and a business journal right now. Hmm. But my contact information is 502-408-7667, and that is my office number. And then my email address is pressforwardmedia@gmail.com. So you can pretty much call me or email me. Emailing is really better because I'm always online. And, you know, pretty much can get you together with whatever you need.
That's interesting. So, I mean, but like what, I mean, I heard some of your future goals, but what is something that you would like to do, I guess, within the next 5-year period?
Well, in the next 5 years, we absolutely would like to expand. You know, the print game is really interesting, and I learn something new every day in it. So one of the things we definitely want to do is we want to expand to some other markets, like, you know, D.C. and maybe Oakland, Memphis, Tennessee, because those are some areas that really could use what we're doing. Maybe not so much Atlanta and Florida, because those are oversaturated with print companies, a whole lot more competitive. But certainly expanding, and then expanding to the point where we can really hire. At this point, we haven't been able to hire anyone. Like periodically, though, we've had some family members that have come in, you know, temporarily and worked, but we have not been able to just bring someone in on salary. So that's another goal, is to be able to really open up and to be able to employ some other people. We have done some internships, but those are mostly graphic designers, so they were really more interested in the graphic design side as opposed to the printing side of it. But yeah, that's the main thing, is just being able to expand, you know, and the main thing is, you know, for at least for me personally, is that, you know, I have younger people in my family who, you know, I just feel really compelled to show them something other than what they're used to seeing. And I think that, you know, when we look at our community as a whole, you know, like, I think a part of my motivation in life has been some of the examples that have been around me. And I've been real lucky. I mean, even though I came from very humble beginnings and really have suffered some traumatic things, I feel very lucky that I always had some, you know, special people around me that served as an example, or, you know, just served as an example, but also just to show me that, you know, like, we're not limited, you know, like, right, as a group of people, we're not limited to just being an employee for somebody else, you know, and that we can do things, you know, and you know, because there's this stigma that, you know, mm-hmm, if you don't, like, you know, there's this, like, if you don't go to college, then you're not going to be successful. Mm-hmm. If you don't, like, and don't get me wrong, you should certainly go to school, especially if you have the means. And I don't really know who doesn't have the means to go to school, especially coming out of high school. If you do all right, you can go to school. But at the same time, that doesn't determine whether or not you're successful. And I think that if you're driven and you're willing to go after your dreams, then your credentials don't matter, you know. So I, you know, so for me, it's always been important for the younger people in my family to be able to see that, you know, that they're not limited, you know. So
okay. Well, let me ask you something. You did mention the fact that, you know, you have special people in your corner. Could you tell us who?
Well, wow, a lot of people, just at different points in my life, a lot of different people. So, I mean, one person in particular would be my stepmother. I think that what I saw with her, you know, number one, she came from an era of people, of our people, who absolutely worked in that forbidden sector. She was a housekeeper for a wealthy white family here in the city. They owned a chain of Long John Silver's. So she worked for them. She cleaned our house. And I used to go with her to work. So I would go with her to work in this mansion, you know, like these people who had money, you know, all kind of cars. And so she's cleaning our house, and, you know, and it was really interesting. So one, I was happy to be there because I could really just kind of dream and say, I really want to have these things. But more importantly, I saw her get to a point where she said, you know, I think it got to a point where she was embarrassed for my brothers and sisters to see her work that way. So she started going to school and she got her degree. She became a nurse. And so, you know, she really served as inspiration for me because she said that she showed me that you don't have to, it doesn't matter where you are, you can do better. Like, you know, and it's never too late because, you know, by the time she went to school, she was like in her late 40s, you know, mm-hmm, going to school. And so I was really inspired by that. Culturally, you know, there was a group of women here that, you know, and I don't even know if they know how they inspired me, but I did some programs when I was younger. One of them was called the NIA Day Camp, and it was ran by a sister named Harlena Chern. And what she would do is she would go to Africa, and she would just come back, and she would teach us dance, and she would teach us, you know, songs and just art and, you know, how to tie-dye and how to make food, and she would teach us about the culture. But most importantly, she just really taught us, like, that self-love. And, you know, for me, especially being a darker complected woman, like, that's something that I really feel like I need. It's like, because when a person doesn't have the esteem, that proper esteem, then that can prevent them from living out their potential. And so I'm just really grateful for her and Mama Zambia, who passed away, and Nana Ya, and it was just so many of them, you know, even Heaven and Earth 360 now, like all of those women, like, just was these women who was making a way. Like, they were doing things that were non-traditional, You know, I didn't see none of the women in McDonald's or, you know, and not even to say that they didn't work there and not to say that there's anything wrong with them working there, but that's not what I saw. I saw them doing what they loved, and I think that that encouraged me, you know. And then I as I got older, I traveled, so I met more people, but I just always been lucky enough to meet people who just kind of touched me, you know, and encouraged me, you know, and just kept me focused, even, you know, in moments where I felt very weak or I wanted to give up or, you know, I just wanted to go in a different direction. So, you know, those, they, I mean, I really can't say enough about them. So.
Okay. We do have a caller on the line, and this is one of our regulars who always call in and always has some real important things to say. So I'm going to take her right now. 757-405-21, you're on the Black Power Radio. Black Power Queen. Black Power Queen. You here? Okay. I'm gonna place her back on hold. Raise your hand back up when you're ready, Queen, to speak on the air. Okay. At any rate, Queen, I have I don't know. What keeps you going each day? What keeps you going each day right now at this point, in this stage of your game, your stage of your life? What keeps you going? What motivates you right now at this point?
I guess I'm motivated by everything. I mean, one, I guess, you know, I have that main motivation of I can't lose, you know. Yeah, I don't know if that's a black thing. I don't know, but it's just that thing of I can't lose, so I got to keep going, and I got to weather the storm whenever the storm arises. And then the other thing I would say is my niece and nephew who live with me and who I care for. I try to, you know, I want them to see the power of working hard. So I have to do it for that. And then, you know, I also have to honor my commitments, you know. So when you go into business, you know, and usually people aren't in business solely by themselves. They usually have business partners, whether they are silent or active, you know. But when you make those kind of commitments to do something, to build with another person, you got to honor those commitments. So another thing to keep me going is just honoring that commitment to my business partner that when we say we're going to start and we're going to see it through, you know, we understood that those first 5 years of any business are the most trying. And so, you know, one of the things that we committed to one another is that, you know, even no matter how tough it gets, we got to make sure that we see it past that 5 year mark, because we knew that it would be more fruitful once we can make it past that 5 year mark. So, you know, that keeps me going. And then, you know, I guess really more on the lines of the topic of the show, that the other thing is that, you know, being with the party, when I was with the party, I saw that, you know, we needed more people like mm-hmm. us in business, you know, because one of the worst feelings that I had was at the times when we needed to set up a venue or we needed to get materials or we needed to do certain things, and then we had to deal with the very people that we really didn't want to deal with or deal with mm-hmm. the very people that we felt like were oppressing us or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a hard pill to swallow, and I'm a prideful person. So it really, you know, and so then when you're in a situation where you need services from a person and they're not treating you right, but you really need these services, it just was really tough. So, you know, and then also being a person who spent a lot of money, you know, to try and keep the movement going and just really getting exhausted of those, I realized that, one, I needed to be able to find a way to have the resources to do what I wanted to do, whether it was donate time, money, or whatever, but then also be a vessel. So I think that is, you know, my other motivation is just being able to be a vessel. So most of the community here, especially that the community that we would consider to be the movement or the Black Power community or the conscious community, whatever you want to call it, the believers, whatever you want to call it here, you know, at some point or another, I've dealt with them. And, you know, and I just try to show love however I can in that moment. And that was one of my goals. It's one of the things I wanted to do in building the business, is to be able to help out whenever I could. So, you know.
So how long have you had your business, or been in business, I should say?
Since 2008. The magazine has been in existence since 2006. So.
Okay. Wow, you have some type of stability. That's like really, really, really important. Could you talk about some of the, I guess, the, what do I want to say and how do I want to say? Can you talk about some of the struggles, I guess, in owning your own business?
The struggle is, you know, when you, there's a, okay, first of all, let me say that I was in the military. So I have been across all the extremes of being inside of a workplace. And so being in the military provides you so much security, okay? Security from having a salary, you know, where it doesn't matter how many days you work, even though you pretty much are expected to work a certain amount of days, but you're guaranteed 30 days of leave per year. You're guaranteed 3- and 4-day weekends every time there's a holiday. You know, you're guaranteed to get some sort of money for food, money for housing. You know, you're guaranteed a raise every year. You're guaranteed a bonus, you know. And then you don't pay any money for your medical expenses. So under that setting, it doesn't get more secure than that. In fact, it's so secure that if you have a family and you're in the military, you really can't get out of the military, because you'll never get that kind of security again unless you hit the lottery. You'll never have the security to where you have a full ride medical coverage for your whole family where you don't pay a dime at all, you know, because even as a civilian, you got to pay a copay, and you're going to pay a certain portion of any service that you get, you know. So, one, I came from that environment of having that sort of security. To coming into the real world as a civilian and realizing I have to pay for all those things, to going into business and realizing that now I am the entity that I expected, you know, certain things from when I worked for someone. So when I worked in a company, you know, the company would match my medical benefits. So if I had coverage and I paid $15, they paid $15. You know, and that's if you work for a good company, because some companies aren't even going to do that. They'll just offer you something discounted. you know, so now that's non-existent, you know, because in order for me to get medical coverage as a business, I have to have 10 employees or a specific amount of employees to do that. So that's certainly a downfall. And I don't have sick days. So what happens is, you know, if I'm not feeling well, I need to get myself well quickly, and I need to stay away from my business partner because we both can't afford to be sick. So, you know, it's really not convenient if we're both sick at the same time, you know, because we can't really afford to just shut it down unless we plan to shut it down, you know, whether it's vacation or whatever, you know. So, you know, so it's a lot of things that aren't just given, you know. So if we're slow for 2 months, you know, we're not getting any unemployment or anything like that. So, you know, when the business as a whole takes a hit, I directly take a hit. So I'm not covered like in other businesses where when the business takes a hit, most of the time the employees don't necessarily take the same hit unless maybe their hours are reduced or something like that, or unless they're just, you know, laid off. But if they get to keep their job, usually they're not taking a hit. The company is taking a hit. So, I mean, those are certainly the downfalls. And then, you know, then the other thing is just, you know, which is one of the hardest parts to deal with, is that, you know, being Black-owned, being a double minority, you know, which has its benefits, because some of the benefits is that there are companies that really need to do business with us. They need to do business with us because they're trying to, you know, get their tax breaks for doing business with minority-owned, and we're a double minority. So that there's a benefit. But then the downfall is that, you know, there are a lot of people who don't respect, you know, the fact that we're women or the fact that we're Black. And so, you know, they feel like they don't have to do, you know, up, up,
you know, just honest business with us, or a respectable business. So some people walk in the door and they just expect that, you know, they should get the highest of quality for the lowest of cost, or you know, or they feel that because we look the same that I should, you know, just totally should take a loss, you know. And so, you know, and that can be troubling and it can be frustrating sometimes, but you know, you just learn to deal with people and work through it, you know. And sometimes you do got to give a little bit to get a little bit, but you know, so I guess those are the main downfalls. But like after that first year, you know, we just sort of learned to roll with the punches, you know. And at the end of the day, you know, I'm an extremely understanding person, so most people aren't going to find very many people who are willing to, who's willing to understand or be understanding of our situation. So, you know, I deal with people on a case-by-case basis, and what I try to do is I try to practice discretion. So sometimes people come in, and if I feel their energy and I know, and I'm listening to what they're trying to do and I believe in it, then I'm going to work with them, you know. But if it's a person, you can't come in my office and pull out a wad of money and ask me for a discount. You just can't do it. You can't do it. You know, so it's that's tough. But it's people who come in and they pulling out their last money and they trying to give me everything that they got because they really ain't trying to invest in what they have. And so I'm usually more willing to work with that person because I can see that they're willing to make the investment, you know, that they're willing to spend their last. So, like, let me help you. So, you know.
Well, I want to definitely touch on the women aspect of it and the that I really want to touch on that, but I do have a question in the chat room. We have a someone for Justice ask, what is your organizational structure? Is it an LLC or S Corp?
We are an LLC. Our umbrella business is an LLC, and then Chiquita and I are partners in the printing company. Yeah, so that is our structure, and then we're working on a nonprofit as well.
Okay, I want you to touch on that too, but I think I have a. Before you do that, I'm going to go ahead and take this caller on 205-253. You are on Black Power Radio. How can
Black
I help?
Power. I have a question for the guests. I have two stepdaughters. They 10 and 12. Mm-hmm. What can I do to move them in the right direction to be more productive, especially as Black women?
Okay, that's a beautiful question.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think the main thing is that when, you know, first of all, young people have a lot of great ideas. And so I think the best thing you can do is sort of facilitate those ideas. So when, you know, they're saying, oh, I would really like to do this, sit down and figure out how they can do it, because they can pretty much, anything that they think they can do, they really can do it. So, you know, if your daughter is saying, you know, I like to, you know, have my own magazine, then sit down and, I mean, really it's very simple. Sit down and figure out how she can do that and then help her do it, you know. Mm-hmm. And so when she sees that she has your support, like, she's going to become more creative. She's going to be more driven, more focused, you know, because the worst thing that we can endure as people, specifically as women, is for people to not believe in us or to doubt us or to just have a personal esteem that makes us feel like we can't do it, you know. So, you know, if you just, you know, ask them what they want and to help them do it, they'll take off on their own. You know, all they need to know is that you're willing to help them if they need the help. And then once you show them that, they're not even going to want your help. They're going to do it on their own.
Okay, what do you think I can do for as a Black male, how I can influence them for us, pushing them to their goal?
Well, I guess you would have to really look and see in your community what kind of resources that there are. And the reason why I say that is because there are certain tests that you can take, that people can take, but that children can take, that kind of will show you what your niche is. And once you show a person what they're good at, then what you do is you bombard them with opportunity to develop themselves in that area. I mean, in all areas, but in that area. So if you find that one of them is really good as an artist, then you have to do a lot of research to find out how can I keep her involved in this particular area. But I don't know, what city are you in?
Birmingham, Alabama. Yes, ma'am.
I think one place to start could be with the Urban League. I mean, it's not necessarily one of my favorite organizations, but they do have a lot of resources. Mm-hmm. It would be something like, I don't know if they're called that, aptitude test. What do they call, Sister Amira? It's like it's the test that kind of let you know what your niche is. Mm-hmm. So they'll ask
it's like
you
a
questions.
Career. It's like a career, some kind of type of career test, just to find out, to ask you a series of questions.
Right.
You can actually go online and, like, do a research and
you
know, pull those tests, just put career tests. You know,
but what it'll do is it'll help you to know what direction to go in with them. Because at the end of the day, if it's something that a kid like, they're more likely to be focused and they're more likely to to work hard when it's something that they personally feel passionate about. That's pretty much what I can give you off the top of my head. But I did put my email out, and so you're more than welcome to email me, and I certainly would love to explore that
again,
more
queen.
With you. It's
give
Press
it to again.
Forward Media, PRESS, Forward
FOR. Media.
Huh?
Forward Media.
Yeah, @gmail.com.
@gmail.com. Okay,
mm-hmm.
I sure will. Thank you for your answers.
You're welcome.
My fucking brother, well, that's a new recruit. It's a good brother, though, Black Power.
Black
Thank
power.
You, brother. Okay, I guess my regular caller that normally calls in, I guess she got her hand up. Let's let her answer her question or her comment. 757-405, you're on Black Power Radio.
Black Power, my sister. This is Queen.
Black Power,
Diva.
Queen.
Yes, I want to ask her, is her business, do they help our people? Like, I'm a writer, I write books. And do they publish books with her company? Because I'm a writer, so I'm looking for a company to be able to publish my books, but I want to publish with my own people.
Okay. Well, actually, we're not a publishing company, although we do publish a magazine. But I'm willing to explore anything. Everything that I do, I didn't do it before I did it the first time. You know what I'm saying? So I'm certainly willing to explore that. We haven't had very many of our people come as writers, especially, you know, other than maybe some poetry or things of that nature. We haven't had very many people come to us as, like, you know, I'm writing a book or I'm writing a novel or self-help. So I'm very open to discuss that. And we certainly have some resources, and we do know people, so we can figure it out, you know.
I can
tell you that. Okay, and that's even better, like, because then we know because my main concern always is, like, are we taking our people forward, or are we taking us backwards? So we did meet a woman before, and she kind of, you know, she was a writer, but she was, it was sort of like some Zane kind of stuff, and I just wasn't too sure. You know, I wasn't sure, like, if I wanted to be a part of that. But, you know, to me, if we taking us forward, then it ain't wrong. And I'm down with it, so.
But, see, I got a book called Mouth Got You Here, Mouth Took You Away. And that book is very powerful because it's about the master and the slave owner, where the skeleton was in the tree and talking to the master. It's a powerful book. Yeah,
give her your information again, so just in case you missed it.
Can I give you my email address?
You can. Do you got a Facebook?
Yes, my Facebook is Africa Wusada, AFR.
You can send it to, I'm on Facebook as Queen Kashiba.
Queen Kashiba.
I'm on the sister's page.
Spell Kashiba?
Yeah, it's K-A-S-H-E-B-A.
K-A-S-H-E-B-A.
Uh-huh. Okay, I'm a...
And it's all Queen Sheba.
Okay. Well, I'll link with you from Amira's page.
Yeah, because yes,
she's
I'm
on
her
page.
Page. Yes, yes.
Well, thank you so much. Go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was telling her she'll be hearing from me because I'm on the computer now as we speak. So I'm.
Okay. That's
so
peace.
You'll
that's
be hearing from me in about 5 minutes.
All right. That's peace.
Okay. Thank you, Queen, for your comment and your blessing. Okay. Black Power.
Okay. You too. Blessings and love, sister.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, we have we got another call on the line for you, Queen.
Okay.
They give me this. 502-386. You're on Black Power Radio.
Peace, how y'all doing?
Doing great.
I was talking to Sister Africa actually about this not too long ago. She knows who I am. It's Philip. First of all, doesn't she sound so good on the radio? She does. She's very intelligent. give her a hug, Grace, y'all. Give her a hug, Grace.
Right.
We talk
she
about,
doesn't
we
know
about,
you, though.
Right.
You didn't pay him to say this. It's okay.
Nah, I didn't pay him.
Yeah, but she did. She has to pay a lot more. But this question about black businesses, because, you know, here in Louisville, well, the population is about 20% African American, and there's always, I think, this balance of the hookup in black business culture. While the hookup is seen, and I really want to ask people who believe in black power ideologies this, because the hookup seems to be a political benefit. You know, people saying the previous caller was talking about she wanted to work with her people and get her book published, things like that. But the hookup also seems to undermine our any sort of economic initiative or policy, meaning that some of the businesses are quite bad, some of the customer service is quite horrible, and how, as a business owner, do you balance out this obvious political bent of wanting to serve a specific demographic or ethnic group, but at the same time, a business has to be good. It has to have a quality business to it. If the chicken isn't cooked, I'm not going to eat there, whether it's black or white owned. If the printing service is bad, I'm not going to go there if it's black or white owned. If the paper has a lot of misspellings and doesn't have proper grammar, I'm not going to read it whether it's black or white. So how do you balance that out, and how can you, I guess, honestly tell people who may be down with you politically but may be against you economically and may just not have the talent to even be a part of your business?
Wow, that's a good question. Well, I tell you what, since the beginning, we've certainly learned to not rely on, solely rely on our people to stay in business. And we sort of knew that going into it. So we have a good amount of corporate business that we get. And so, and not even so much that we rely on them, we rely on the balance of the two. But it is very difficult when you're working with your people, and like I said before, the people have an expectation of the highest of quality, but because we look alike, then they need it to be of the lowest of prices. And so, like, you know, once again, like, I really try to put that on a case-by-case basis. You can't come in my business, and I know you on the block, and I know you getting it in, and I know you
right.
got money. You can't come in and ask me to. In fact, really, I feel like you did wrong. For real, you should pay me more. But I don't tell them that. But that's what I'm thinking. Like, don't ask me to do X, Y, and Z because you don't know what kind of month I had in my business last month. But then, like I said, at the same time, you know, I may have a person come in and say, look, I'm really trying to do this. They have a really good business idea. They're really motivated. They're really focused. So I may, you know, even against maybe my better judgment or even against my financial judgment, I may still help them out because, you know, I see where they're going. So it is really difficult because our people are good at putting a standard, you know, and almost an unrealistic standard on you in business. So it's tough. And then they'll compare you, like, you know, our people are really good at comparing apples and oranges.
So, you know, I always have to explain a lot. You know, I'm not Kinko's. I'm not a multi-million dollar company. So
they wouldn't approach you like they approach Kinko's either. That's
right. They'll pay Kinko's whatever Kinko's asks.
So I guess that might be getting to my larger point, which is that I'm not blaming black business owners and I'm not blaming black customers. I think it's both ways, that when an African-American of a certain mindset goes into maybe not even a white-owned business, because some of these places are corporations, so they're sort of amorphous. They don't have a race. They're just these big, giant companies. But when you go into Kinko's, people don't behave a certain way. But when they deal with a black business, they behave a certain way. And then vice versa, for black business owners, when they have white clientele, maybe in maybe their white store, the store that's in a whiter part of town, they act one way, but then I think the system goes on talking about, let's just say it, so unique. When they owned the restaurant on 26th and Broadway, I don't know if it was their fault as the business owners or the customer's fault, but I don't know if that was, I know that's not how things operate, for example, maybe at Saphir's downtown.
Right, 360
or,
Cafe.
Or Cafe 360 in the Highlands.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Calling out names and stuff.
Well, I hope none of those folks is listening to this blog talking.
Oh, trust me, they're not. They are definitely not listening to this program, so you don't worry about that.
Well, I mean, you're right, and I ate there, and you're right. It's really tough because we are our own worst critics. But you know, no one said it better than Dr. Khalid Muhammad, and he said that oppressed people take on the characteristics of the oppressor. So we got a lot of work to do. We got a long way to go, and we have to be able to work with each other and be understanding. Yeah, very short time. So we got to be able to work with each other and be understanding, and then where we place high demand on people, on businesses, we also need to put that same standard on ourselves to be model consumers, you know, because you can't just expect that, you know, everything is going to go in your favor. And then, like, let's be real. We talk about the vein of customer service and what customer service is to this town. I mean, like, just if we talk about it in a historical sense, we're talking about Louisville, Kentucky. A lot of slaves came to this place and just stopped running. And the reason why is because there were slave jobs here that was paying. So people here, so like I said, my stepmother, even in the 80s and early 90s, was still cleaning house, you know, and she was making good money. Don't get me wrong. She was making a very decent wage doing that. So because of that, this is a service town, and when I think about customer service is slavery for pay, you know. So we have gotten very used to being the servants and being talked to and treated a certain kind of way. And so because we take on the characteristics of our oppressor, what happens is when we get the power of money in our hands and we dealing with our people, we can't wait to treat our people bad.
Man,
we can't wait to treat
right
our
around,
people
right
bad
around dirty
because,
time and tax time. Right
man,
around dirty time and tax
roll,
time. Oh, right around dirty
money
time
at
and
people.
Tax time in Louisville. I mean, Louisville, Kentucky is the worst place to be if you're black in derby time. Black people act a fool.
Throw money at you. They'll just walk out of a place. I mean, we can't wait to treat somebody else bad because we've been treated bad our whole lives. So we really have to be patient with each other. We got to educate each other. Some people we got to dismiss them and leave them behind because they ain't getting no better, you know. But we got all those things we have to do with a discerning eye, and that's the hard part, you know, because sometimes the people some of the people that we got to leave behind are our friends and family, you know. So.
Exactly.
I don't know, but, you know, I'm for us. Even if everybody else is against us, I'm for us, and I still believe that that we going to make it, you know, so.
Okay, Brother Philip, I don't even know what's your last two digits of your number so I can put you on, so I can mute your mic.
3-4.
Okay, there we go. All right, brother. I'm going to go ahead and wrap this show up I thank you for calling in, though. I met that brother once. That was a good one. But, yeah, so anything you want to touch on, no, before we end this show, I should have made this long. I'm going to have to invite you to come back, Queen. But anything else you need to, you feel like you need to touch on for, to, you know, to encouragement or anything you want to say, because we have said a mouthful in the short time that we have.
Well, I'll say this. I'll say that, you know, it takes money to make money, that you got to be willing to roll your sleeves up and get dirty. You have to be willing to give in order to get. You got to be willing to sacrifice and be a sacrifice. In order to be successful, and it don't happen overnight, and so that's what I would say, you know. And I think that a lot of people are looking for these get rich quick schemes, and they think that everything is just going to be so fast, you know, because we're in this fast food age. You know, it's the worst that we're so used to getting food from McDonald's and Burger King so quick, we'll go to a restaurants and where they cook the order, and we lose our mind. We like, what the hell's taking so long, you know? So we really have to be patient with the process of building, because building has starts with a foundation, and then you got to build a sound structure, and that ain't easy. Sometimes in building a sound structure, you got to break things down and rebuild it. Like, so all those things need to be considered. So, you know, you have, and that's why it's important to find what it is that you love, because when it's what you love, then it's not even work. It's not hard, you know, and even the days that are stressful, they're not so stressful that it sets you back. You know, you just go home, soak your feet and breath, and you get up and do it all over and happily do it all over again. So, you know, I guess that's my final word. Just, you know, make sure it's what you love, and make sure that you are prepared for the long haul, whatever that is.
Okay. Well, again, I want to thank you for coming on Black Power Radio, and I would definitely like to invite you back. So really, 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 black power to all people, all of our people. And I must want to say that it's very, very important that we start owning our own businesses, because if we don't, we're not following the 10-point program of wanting freedom and creating economics for our households, and we're not able to do what it is that we need to do as a people and raise our frequencies up and continue the wellness for our sisters, how really, really important that is. So I just need everybody to please, please, please free ourselves eventually. Now, don't just quit your jobs now. We talk about planning ahead. We talk about putting money away to start it, especially if you have a family. But we definitely want everybody to eventually start working toward that now, while you have the money to do that. While we're getting these tax dollars and we're throwing it in people's faces and say, I want a car and you nigga rich. We definitely want to get out there and start buying our own businesses. Please, black people. But, of course, we're ending tonight, and next week we will have a show. Next week, next Wednesday, please tune in for Black Power Sisters Night again. Thank you again, Sister Africa, for coming on. Black Power, everybody.
Black Power.
No problem. Black Power, everybody.
Until the philosophy which hold one race superior and another inferior is finally and permanently discredited and abandoned, everywhere is war. It's a war that until there are no longer first class and second class citizens of any nation, until the color of a man's skin is of no more significance than the color of his eyes. It's a war that until the basic human rights are equally guaranteed to all with with regards to race, it is a war that until that day, the dream of lasting peace, world citizenship, rule of international morality, will remaining but a fleeting illusion to be pursued, but never attained. Now everywhere is war, war, and until the ignoble and unhappy regime that hold our brothers in arms,